Outbeat Extra, the Outbeat radio show that slips into the schedule when a fifth Sunday pops up in the calendar. I'm Gary Carnevale, with a frog in my throat, here in the KRCB studios with my co-host Greg Moralia. We have an exciting show in store for you tonight. First, we'll chat with Out Petaluma City Council member Gabe Kearney. Later, we'll have a conversation with Cynthia Stefanoni, who is one of the organizers of the LGBTQI Days of Films. First, here's Greg with Outbeat Radio News and Calendar.
I have found Outbeat Radio News, your source for LGBT news from the North Bay and beyond.
Good evening, this is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio News for this Sunday, September 29th, 2013. Former President George Bush Sr. attended a wedding of friends Bonnie Clement and Helen Thorgelson, the owner of a general store in Kennebunk, Maine, and then signed their marriage license as the official witness. Thorgelson told ABC News, quote, "This has been a wonderful wedding experience for us, and we're honored to have the President and Mrs. Bush not only in attendance, but also happy to sign our license." Bush spokesman Jim McGrath did not confirm whether the Republican former president supports marriage equality, but he said the wedding was a private ceremony for two friends. And this week, scientists stumbled into a breakthrough when a recent study found that a drug prescribed for toenail fungus came with a handy side effect. It appears to eradicate infectious HIV cells, causing the mitochondria to commit suicide. Best of all, there's no rebound of virus when the drug is stopped. A study performed at Rutgers, New Jersey Medical School revealed that not only the drug Cyclopyrix completely eradicate infectious HIV from cell cultures, but unlike today's most cutting-edge antiviral treatments, the virus doesn't bounce back when the drug is withheld. This means it may not require a lifetime of use to keep HIV at bay. Still needed are clinical trials in humans to study the safety and efficacy of the Cyclopyrix as a potential topical HIV treatment, but it's already deemed safe for one human use, which could make the regulatory process much faster than usual. And from Louisiana, Tony Perkins has worn many hats throughout his life: television reporter, police officer, Louisiana state representative, and head of a certified hate group. But the president of the viciously homophobic Family Research Council earned a new title this week when Governor Bobby Jindal appointed him to the Louisiana Commission on Law Enforcement. This means he now grants awards, trains officers, and regulates law enforcement throughout the state. Given that homosexuality remains criminalized in Louisiana and that gay men are still arrested simply for having sex, in direct violation of the U.S. Supreme Court, one might think that things couldn't get any worse for Louisiana's LGBT population. Because according to Perkins, pedophilia is, quote, a homosexual problem that seeks to, quote, recognize pedophiles as prophets of the new sexual order. Gay men are, quote, more likely to engage in child sexual abuse than are heterosexual men. And he said, in fact, quote, homosexuals have entered the Boy Scouts in the past for predatory purposes. The Louisiana governor has just put this man in charge of law enforcement in Louisiana. And here locally, Food for Thought, in collaboration with the Occidental Arts and Ecology Center, will present the 13th Annual Calabash, a celebration of gourds, art, and the garden, on Sunday, October 6th from 1 to 5 p.m. The event is one of Sonoma County's most colorful and inspiring harvest events and was named Best Fundraiser by readers of the North Bay Bohemian. Calabash features a silent auction of fine gourd art, along with tours of the Food for Thought's beautiful organic gardens, which will be at their peak. Guests at Calabash will enjoy a sumptuous array of fine food and wine from Sonoma County's bountiful harvest and live music played on handmade gourd instruments. This year, Calabash will also feature a sale of select garden art and an exclusive selection from the Food for Thought antiques. New this year will be the celebration of Food for Thought's 25th anniversary, as well as additional entertainment and other surprises. More than 100 Sonoma County and Bay Area artists have been invited to participate in Calabash this year, bringing their own artistic sensibilities and magic to the gourd form. Gourds harvested from the food bank's gardens were offered to the artists, who then created captivating and unique pieces for this unique and very popular fundraiser. Tickets are $45 in advance, $50 at the door. You can learn more at www.ftfoodbank.org. Now here's your calendar of events for the coming week. On Monday, September 30th, and every Monday at 5:30 p.m., the Petaluma Health Center will host an LGBT support group at 1179 North McDowell Boulevard in Petaluma. And also on 7 p.m., PFLAG Sonoma County will meet at the Knox Presbyterian Church, 1650 West 3rd Street in Santa Rosa. And on Tuesday, October 1st, from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m., the Transgender North Bay Group will meet at the Positive Images Center, 312 Chin Street in Santa Rosa. And on Friday, October 4th, the Mill Valley Film Festival will host the world premiere of Matt Shepard Was a Friend of Mine. This new documentary, produced by personal friends of Matthew Shepard, shows the real truths about the person behind the icon Matthew Shepard. The film will also show on Sunday, October 6th. Tickets are available at the Mill Valley Film Festival website, mvff.com. And here's a save the date for you. Transitions, a gay men support group for those 55 and older, will share to encourage each other in finding innovative ways to face the challenges of aging. The group is facilitated by trained senior peer counselors from the Family Service Agency. This group will meet for 12 weeks on Thursdays beginning October 10th from 10 a.m. to noon. It will happen at 2233 Challenger Way, Suite 106 in Santa Rosa. Registration is required, and you can learn more by calling 707-545-4551. If there's an event you'd like to share with our listeners, be sure to tell us about it by going to our website at outbeatnews.com. And be sure to follow us all week long on Facebook and Twitter for the latest LGBT news and information from here in the North Bay and beyond. For Gary Carnevale, I'm Greg Moralia.
Outbeat Radio News, your source for LGBT news from the North Bay and beyond.
Welcome back to Outbeat Extra. I'm Gary Carnevale here with my co-host Greg Moralia. We have the honor to have with us here Petaluma City Council Member Gabe Kearney. Gabe, welcome to Outbeat Extra.
Thank you very much for having me tonight.
Yeah, it is great to have you here. And I don't know that I'm really familiar with your entire political career. I know that you ran for office and then you were eventually appointed to the City Council in 2011. Talk about how that all came to be.
So in 2010, I ran and I lost by about a little over 200 votes. And so it was kind of a close race. And in Petaluma, we're the only city that directly elects the mayor. And the mayor was on the council at the time, so they needed to appoint someone to fill out the rest of his term. And after two council meetings and about six different rounds of voting, I finally got enough votes to be appointed. And took office March 1st of 2011 and then ran for re-election in 2012 and came in second out of three spots and the top three were elected.
Awesome.
So yeah, it's been a fun ride since joining the council.
Good for you.
So were you always interested in politics and holding public office?
You know, growing up as a kid, I wouldn't read a lot of books about, like, you know, you know, if Harry Potter was around when I was a kid, that wouldn't at all be the books I would be into. I was reading books on the Kennedys and on Boston, Massachusetts, how their political system runs. And so, you know, there was a big difference between what I was into when I was younger and what a lot of the other kids were into. And every Sunday I'd get up and watch Meet the Press with my father and you know, stay tied into what was going on politically. And so politics has always been a very very passionate thing for me. So yeah, did I ever think I was going to run for office? Not really.
Yeah.
But I enjoy it now.
Nice. So the media, especially the local media here in Northern California, often prefers to describe conservatives or Republican candidates and elected officials as pro-business, which implies Democrats and progressives are anti-business. Describe this so-called split in business interests in the city council in which you serve.
Well, I think that with local newspapers, their big goal is selling newspapers, right? And so a controversy or some kind of conflict is going to be what sells. In Petaluma, we have one Republican on the council. So, you know, with six Democrats and one Republican, they have to try and find a rift somewhere. And for me, I've never identified with the term progressive. I actually don't like the term progressive. Mm-hmm. I'm a liberal. I'm a, you know, true liberal in every sense. You can, if you were to look at my views, very in line with Tip O'Neill and with a lot of the Kennedys. And so when they try and divide everyone, it's essentially over, you know, over land use issues, which aren't a party issue at all. You know, it's, the Democratic Party doesn't vote on their platform whether or not they're going to approve drive-thrus, you know, in shopping centers.
Right.
But that's what really what a lot of the issues come down to is you know, chain stores, drive-thrus, and, you know, how much growth are we going to have or not going to have. And so that's where they can divide us. And they, rather than go by political party, they go by that, you know, are you pro or anti-business? And it's really misinformative because depending on how you're voting, you might your votes might be pro some business but not pro others, you know. So for me, when we look at land use decisions and things like that, I have to look at what's going to bring jobs to the community, what's going to bring revenue into the city, and how am I going to keep the doors open, right, at City Hall? How am I going to keep the water running, right? All those things that people don't think about that are the backbone of city government, you know, the water, the sewer, you know, things like that, parks. They see the police department, they see the fire department, right, going to calls. But it's, you know, the streets, the water, those things are the things that people don't think about too often. Although in Sonoma County, they do think about the roads because they are horrible.
And Petaluma, I remember for a couple years running there, they were maligned as having the worst roads.
We are.
It's gotten better.
We were at one point, but now the county is, I think, taking that claim. And I actually think an area in Contra Costa County is now the worst.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, you know, a lot of the problem is that with Prop 13 and the property taxes, you know, a lot of families that have lived here for a long time, you know, you could just sell the house to your kid and they keep the property at that tax level that you bought it at. And so we have people with, you know, multi-million-dollar property values that are paying, you know, $1,000 a year in property tax. And that's where we get the things to, you know, the revenue to pay for those infrastructure issues.
And just talking about the businesses a little bit, I mean, I was in downtown Petaluma here recently for dinner and for a concert, and it's really changed. It's really getting some nightlife to it. It's really developing. And there's still a lot of local businesses there that are really, really nice. I mean, some good restaurants, and it's, you know, it's really coming into its own. And I've seen this happen in other towns, you know, Healdsburg, for example. And it's evolved into this huge, you know, tourist mecca. But talk about, from your perspective as a council person, how do you maintain that small town nightlife experience and avoid the temptation of bringing in those big revenue generators, those chain stores, the Costco's, the big box
chain
stores that oftentimes, right. the chain restaurants that can often just wipe out the local business?
You know, I think in the downtown area, it's been pretty easy for us to just say, you know what, no, this isn't going to work. I think the only chain that we have down there outside of Starbucks and Pete's is really the, you know, 24-hour fitness. Otherwise, everything's pretty much locally owned, and it's great, and the businesses thrive, and the people enjoy coming to downtown because of the character of downtown. And so I know folks that come up from Novato and from other parts of Marin to come to Petaluma because of the restaurants. Because, you know, sadly, I have to work in San Rafael, and there's not a lot of good restaurants down there in San Rafael. And so a lot of folks come up here to enjoy our restaurants and our nightlife. And one of the things that differentiates us between, you know, when you look at Petaluma and Santa Rosa, for example, is parking. You park in downtown Petaluma, and you're not trying to deal with the awkward, you know, parking meter that they have there. Or, you know, do I have to go to a kiosk and pay and then go back to my car and put it in the windshield? We don't charge you for parking. And so people stay in the downtown area a lot more, and they spend more money in our stores. The few vacancies we've had at some of the stores downtown it turned over pretty quickly. And I always tell people it's not really the buildings and what's in them that creates the feeling of community in Petaluma. It's the people. Petaluma is a very friendly town and very community-oriented town. And so I think that's really the difference between us and many other places. I know for about 9 months, I lived in Novato, and I didn't have that sense of community there at all. It just wasn't a welcoming community, in my opinion. It has some wonderful aspects to it. I will say that. I'm not here to just bash on Novato, but it just didn't have that sense of community that you have in Petaluma that I love.
Great.
Speaking of Santa Rosa, they just opened a Chick-fil-A, and I think probably most of our listeners are aware of the Chick-fil-A sort of controversy. The Georgia-based business really came under fire from LGBT groups for the owner who stood by anti-gay comments he made, and also some discrimination suits that were filed against them. When the restaurant finally did open, I was surprised to see the mayor present there at the opening, and the media really didn't quite cover the fact that there was the controversy, but that the mayor was there. So talk a bit about your thoughts concerning a less than friendly LGBT business seeking to open their doors in the city you represent.
You know, I don't think that a business that wanted, if they wanted to come to Petaluma and open up shop, I don't think they would be welcomed at all. A lot of our businesses in downtown are actually owned by LGBT business owners. And Petaluma is a very friendly community for the LGBT residents. And I don't think that we would see anyone supporting businesses that were openly homophobic and, mm-hmm. or had policies that were homophobic. And so, you know, I think the Chick-fil-A store is really playing off of, you know, that neighborhood right there, right? So you have the junior college and you have folks that are looking for a quick meal. And I think, was it Burger King that was there before, mm-hmm. and it closed? And so people were looking for a fast place to get food. And so I think it's a franchise. And, you know, that the family that bought it, you know, took advantage of that. Whether or not Scott Bartley, the mayor of Santa Rosa, should have been there supporting it, you know, that's not for me to say. I do know that Scott is pretty supportive of LGBT issues, but, you know, it's not an event I would have gone to.
Mm-hmm. Well, you grew up in Petaluma, right?
Yeah.
So you mentioned that Petaluma is a friendly town for LGBT people. Talk about your experience growing up in Petaluma and coming out in that town.
Well, you know, I think Petaluma today and Petaluma in 1999 when I graduated from high school are two different things. And I think our country is a lot different. So in high school, I wasn't out at all. And it wasn't until I was an adult that I came out. But, talking to colleagues at the Victory Fund conference in Long Beach this past year, and it's all out elected officials from all over the country. And when they ask who my biggest supporters were in the campaign, and I can say that my police department and my fire department, those two unions were the biggest supporters for me. I think that is really a good barometer of, you know, where our community is at. Mm-hmm. You know, that the police department would, you know, the union would stand up and say, you know, this is our guy. We're going to stick with him and we're going to put our money where our mouth is. And so a lot of folks who kind of criticize me or my views and or disagree with me will say I'm in the pockets of developers. But really, you know, the unions are the ones that spent mm-hmm. the most amount of money on my campaign. Well, they spent it on independent expenditure accounts mm-hmm. and things like that. So I think it's great. It's a great indicator that the tide has turned. And Petaluma is a more welcoming and open place than it was when I was a kid. And, you know, the Petaluma is becoming more and more diverse as well. It wasn't – when we moved to Petaluma, I was 5 years old. And we moved from the Mission District in San Francisco to Petaluma. So that was quite a big culture change for us. And Petaluma wasn't as diverse as it was as it is now. And so there weren't many Latino families in the elementary school I went to mm-hmm. At the time. And, you know, things have changed, and a lot more folks have moved in from all over the place, and it's great, especially since we can still keep that great community feeling, which right. I feel we haven't lost at all in Petaluma.
Great.
I feel that, too. I really like Petaluma.
And, you know, if you look at the way that the voters have voted, you know, every measure or issue affecting the LGBT community has you know, been voted on favorably mm-hmm. In Petaluma. So Prop 8 lost huge in Petaluma. There was only, I think, 10 donors for the Yes on Prop 8 campaign in Petaluma, one of which was Mrs. Grossman. So you will never see me, you know, supporting Mrs. Grossman stickers in that business. Mm. Mm-hmm. Just because, you know, if you're going to support, you know, if you're going to say that I don't get the same rights as you do, mm-hmm. how am I going to go in and support your business? I can't see that myself. But, you know, it's a very welcoming community. And, you know, it's a place that I'm very happy to call home, and I don't see myself ever leaving.
So you talked about the Victory Fund.
Yeah.
I know the new local Stonewall Democrats club. Are you a member? Or?
So I actually founded the club.
Oh.
Kevin Jones.
With Kevin Jones.
Well, yeah. Kevin Jones had kind of – I founded it. We had a small little group, mm-hmm. and then Kevin Jones kind of brought – it back to life. And so,
oh, nice.
Yeah. And so it's a great group. It's kind of shocking when you looked at, I know when I was starting to get it off, trying to get it off the ground, you look at the donors for the Stonewall organization that are from Sonoma County, mm-hmm. and they donate to this national organization, but yet they weren't getting involved locally because A, there wasn't a club for them to get involved in. And then B, you know, it kind of points to the bigger issue I feel that we have in Sonoma County is that there's this lack of cohesion within the LGBT community.
Right.
And so, you know, I think if you were to have Kevin on, you know, he would agree with me in saying that it's hard to get folks organized around this. You know, when you look at the Prop 8 campaign, the organizers for the No on 8 campaign was a church here in Sonoma County. We don't have folks that are involved and active. Mm-hmm. Like we used to. I remember that one of the first campaigns I worked on was the No on Night campaign back in the 90s with Maddie Hirschfield. And we had a lot more folks involved in that campaign, it seemed. But for whatever reason, there's not a connecting tie here. You know, our LGBT Pride Festival isn't as big as it should be for as many LGBT folks we have here in the county.
Right.
And you know, you look at all of the different LGBT organizations that are here, we don't have as many people supporting them as we should. And it's a bigger issue, I think, that we have in the county.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, if you look, there's a lot of us.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of us out there. But we don't come together as a community like we should, in my opinion.
Right. I want to ask you a question about, you mentioned the police department, the fire department, and talked about their support for mm-hmm. you. And you and I have talked about this before, which is great. And having a law enforcement background myself, it's something I certainly pay attention to as well. Are there any out officers on Petaluma PD? And if not, what's your sense about how that would happen? Because there's still a lot of homophobia in law enforcement and certainly in the fire service as well.
Well, you know, it's interesting. So before I got onto the city council, I worked for the city of Sonoma Fire Department. And because of our city charter, I can't work for another public entity in our county, right? And so mm-hmm. I was out and, you know, did 24, 48-hour shifts out at Sonoma Fire and stayed in the firehouse and never once experienced any kind of homophobia. I did experience folks that had no clue, you know, what to think or what to say, and they just were unfamiliar with it. And so that was kind of, you know, we went through some growing pains. One of the fun questions that people would always tell a new partner that I'd work with on the ambulance was ask Gabe how many girls he's been with in the past, because half the time it was more than they had been with. And so, you know, it was interesting working there. But, you know, once folks got to realize, oh, wait, I am a big, you know, Warriors fan. I watch football. I watch baseball. I'm just like all the other guys that work there. They got past it, mm-hmm. and it was a non-issue the whole time I was there. And I think, you know, one of the things that people might think about Petaluma is that because it is still has that small country town feel, that it wouldn't be a welcoming place for an out public safety person. And I just don't see that. You know, I do ride along with the police department every other month. I just did a day shift yesterday with the Petaluma Police, with Officer Gilman. I should clarify, Officer Paul Gilman, because we have Paul and Dave both on day shift, and they're twins.
Paul was one of my students.
Ah.
So you know, Paul, I did a full day shift with Paul yesterday, and you know, I do that so I can keep connected to knowing what's going on in the city, seeing from their eyes what the issues are, so we can get creative. creative with some of the solutions. When it comes to issues like homelessness and crime, and you know, we've seen an uptick in deaths that have been reported of homeless folks or indigent folks in the community, and so before you go to work in the morning, you know if someone that you're friends with was arrested the night before for drinking and driving. And so it's a little bit different. So I think it's just a perception that because of Petaluma has that country background,
sure,
that it wouldn't be as sure welcoming. There was a little fear or apprehension when I first got onto the council that because I was not elected, because it was on the front page of the Press Democrat, that I was not elected, that I might receive more mail, or you know, someone might be threatening.
Mm-hmm.
And that was never the case. Mm. So, you know, there's a handful of us out there in the county, you know, myself, and Susan on the Healdsburg City Council, Susan,
right,
Jones,
Susan Jones,
and Carol.
In Cloverdale.
Yes. And her name's, I don't know why I'm blanking on it.
I don't want to say Rothman, but.
But, right, you know, so there's a handful of us around.
Right.
Not as many as there was 2 years ago, because we lost one of the council members from Santa Rosa. And John Sawyer, and
right,
then Janet Orchard from Cotati didn't run for election. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a handful of us in the county. And I think, you know, one of the things that is important, and it came up when that Press Democrat article came out, was visibility. Mm-hmm. The more that people know that, oh, hey, you're a law enforcement official, you're a city council person, you're, you know, a nurse or whatever in the community, the more educated folks are going to be about it's not separate rights or
right
anything like that. We're just part of the community. We're, mm-hmm, we've been here all along. We own
right
businesses. We spend money in the community. We generate tax revenue. And we just want to be treated like everyone else.
Right, right.
So moving into the future, talk about what challenges you think Petaluma will face.
You know, one of the things, the biggest issue we're facing right now is financial. And that's across the board. All of the cities are facing that. In Petaluma specifically, we're operating $16 million less than we did 8 years ago.
Wow.
Right? And so that's 16 police officers. That's 3 dispatchers. That's 2 evidence techs, you know, dealing with those. Or, I'm sorry, not evidence techs. 2 community service officers. Did I say that? Dispatchers, CSOs, police officers. We're understaffed. Our parks department, understaffed. Our streets department, understaffed. We don't have the money coming in that we used to. And so that's our biggest problem is looking at how do we generate jobs and get companies to move to Petaluma and have housing for those people that are going to move to Petaluma.
Affordable housing.
For them to stay. And so, you know, we've been working with a couple businesses. More than what their listing price is. And you're having people, you know, before a house even makes it to the website is already sold. And so, you know, when that's the case, we have to look at, okay, well, where are the, if we create these jobs, where are the people going to live, right? And the less commuting that we can have folks doing, the better, because even though we're widening 101, it's about 15-20 years behind
right
when it should have been widened.
Right.
So, you know, we have to look at those things too, and then look at, you know, as more people move here, we need to expand our services and get more services available for folks too.
Right, right. Well, your career is certainly off to an impressive start.
Well, thank you.
What lies ahead? I mean, there's a void in Washington. There's a void at the higher levels. You mentioned some of the local politicians are here. Lynn Woolsey has left a big void for this area. What are your plans?
Well, you know, I think my good friend Jared Huffman is doing a good job in Washington so far. He's proven to be pretty effective at working with folks. But, you know, I think we all can agree, you know, as we approach our deadline tomorrow of, a government shutdown, that things are pretty broken in Washington, D.C. And so, you know, Jared's a pretty young guy, and I don't think he's going to be retiring anytime soon. And so, you know, I can't really run against a guy who campaigned pretty heavily for me in Petaluma. And so Congress is out of the question. And my good friend Mark Levine is on the State Assembly representing Petaluma. And again, I was one of the people that talked him into running. So you won't see me running against him. And if you look at how many bills he got signed this year, he's actually been a pretty effective freshman legislator, especially when you look at the fact that, you know, he was running against an incumbent who was very popular in Sacramento. And he won the seat and had to come in and, you know, start new. And I think he's done pretty well. So I look forward to serving on the Petaluma Council. You know, I have 3.5 more years on my term still. And then planning on running for re-election and staying on the council, hopefully for another at least 8 years.
Good for you.
So I really enjoy it. You know, the pay is great. At $10 a month, I get to be a city council member. It's really, really awesome. So, I couldn't. The only complaint I have is about being on the council is that folks' perception of, you know, we pay these guys a lot of money. They should be available at our beck and call, you know, all the time. And people don't realize that they only do pay us $10 a month. Mm-hmm. The great city of Cotati, their council makes, I think, like 8 times what we make, you know, and they're half the size. Or I actually think even less than half the size. And so it's hard to balance all of the demands, and I still have a full-time job, you know, and then somewhere along the line try and squeeze in a personal life too.
That's an important thing.
Kind of.
Great. Councilmember Gabe Kearney, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you very much for having me tonight. I appreciate it.
Please come back. Let us know what your future plans are. And
we'll do.
We're going to take a little musical break.
And we are. I've got a brand new up-and-coming gay artist from down south, Eli Lieb. You may have heard us play some of his music on shows last month. This is his version of Skyfall.
This is the end. Hold your breath and count to 10. Feel the earth move and then hear my heart burst again. For this is the end. I've drowned and dreamt this moment. Why, oh, then swept away, I'm stolen. Let the sky fall when it crumbles. We will stand tall, we'll face it all together. Let the sky fall, when it crumbles, we will stand tall, we'll face it all. Together, let the sky fall, when it crumbles, we will stand tall, we'll face it all. Together, let the sky fall.
Our next guest is Cynthia Stefanoni, who is one of the producers of LGBTQI Days of Films, which happens October 19th and 20th at the Sebastopol Center for the Arts. Cynthia has worked in the film industry as a producer, director, and production manager. Welcome to Outbeat Extra.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Before we tackle this year's little mini LGBT film festival, talk about the decision to bring queer films to the North Bay last year, its first year, I believe, first year?
It was.
Yes. And those who made it happen.
Well, it took two lesbian filmmakers moving in from Seattle to turn around and point out to the rest of us that here we had this huge LGBTQ population and no film festival that was dedicated to us. So I was working on the Sebastopol Documentary Film Festival at the time as a programmer and a volunteer coordinator, which I still do. And I think Shad Reinstein was the one of the couple, Jody Lane and Shad Reinstein are the women. And she joined as well, and we started talking about this. And the first thing I have to say is that the Sebastopol Center for the Arts, who presents us and presents the Sebastopol Documentary Film Festival, was instrumental. I mean, they just said, go for it. If you bring a plan and you can execute it, we will back you. And they do that by giving us the space and making it easy for us to access the PR that we need. So that's how it came about. And we were so excited that we didn't wait a whole year to have the second one. So we did very, very well. We had one day. We had three films. And we had a sellout, you know, closing film. It helped to have Olympia Dukakis in it, I'm sure. But it was a great film. It was a great narrative, Cloudburst. And so we decided to rev it up quickly and get ourselves into this mode so that we will now take a year off, and then this will be our second, you know, toe-in-the-water sort of mini-film fest. And the plan is that if this goes well, then next year we'll make it a three-day event.
Nice.
Yeah.
So I've been curious. I mean, the North Bay doesn't have a tremendous number of theaters to begin with, and a lot of them are obviously part of major chains that rarely show LGBT-themed films, or foreign films for that matter. What's their hesitation? Why? I mean, we have a huge population of LGBT people in Sonoma County. You would think that there would be a big audience and a big market for LGBT-themed films. How come the big guys are leaving us out?
Well, I think, you know, I wish I knew that answer. I think it's a pretty probably detailed and varied answer. My take on it is, having been in the film business for as many years as I was, I know that by the time you get to distribution, if you're a first-run house, they have a specific slate of films that you buy. It isn't like, oh, that's a good film, I'll take that. No, you buy a slate
like
of films.
A package.
Mm. And whoever is distributing it has X, Y, and Z films, and they're going to give you one or two of their great first-run films if you take this other thing. There's not a lot of space to have those. Now, I have to say that the Rialto in Sebastopol, and Kai also has another in the Bay Area, has another set of screens, does a fairly good job of taking care of this. They also are big supporters of the Days of Film, and they also are huge supporters of the Sebastopol Documentary Film Festival. So they come out, they allow us to put a huge poster, just like a first-run one sheet, in their theater to advertise this. But specifically, the answer is that it's a package, it's a slate, it comes in a year ahead of time, and these guys really have to search for space. It comes down to money. It always does.
which explains, folks, when you want to go to the movies and you look at the 16 screens and you think, there's nothing I want to see.
That's exactly right. You know what? I learned a long time ago, vote with your dollar. If you stop showing up for that stuff,
mm-hmm.
they ain't going to do it.
Right.
Right. Right. Well, yeah, I'm just thrilled that one of the films you selected to open the festival is I Am Divine, which I'm a huge fan of Divine and John Waters and this film, which I saw at Frameline this past summer. Let's talk about this documentary, which is a beautiful celebration of Divine's life and career.
Well, I mean, you and everybody else who got a peek at this film went, holy smokes, this is beyond. One of the things we look for as filmmakers and as producers and programmers is we really want it to have the wow factor. And I mean, with Divine, you know, it walks on the stage.
It's
and
all wow factor.
It's all wow factor. What are you going to do? So, I mean, I guess that film could have run, you know, the risk of being too over the top, although I don't know how you do that with Divine, because too over the top is the signature.
Right.
But it's such a well-made film. Mm-hmm. There's so much information. You really get a sense of the person.
Mm-hmm.
You get a sense of the rise. And then you get a sense of the madness,
mm-hmm.
you know, that is around the career and around the persona.
Right, right.
So it really has all the earmarks of an opening night mm-hmm. film.
And I wrote a review about this film, and what really sort of touched me was how it just paralleled sort of the explosion of, you know, LGBT rights, you know, from that early 70s when he, you know, mid 70s when he was in John Waters, sort of underground films,
right.
and sort of tracks, of course, LGBT, you know, the explosion of LGBT independent films, underground films. Sort
exactly.
of leading into independent films, and how, you know, John Waters was always out and Divine was always out when, you know, I suppose Divine sort of needed, but John Waters didn't need to be. And you know, I remember John Waters films being shown at the Cineplex in the mall in my suburban town. And that just sort of blows my mind that Polyester, which is an outrageous film,
yeah.
was shown in, you know, what would technically, you know, be Petaluma Cinemas or Sonoma Cinemas, which you would never see.
I know.
Today.
It's pretty mind-bending, you know, that actually happened. I mean, I still remember when Pink Flamingos was on the marquee and everyone would go by, ooh.
Right.
But it was there. It was on the marquee. I mean, it was just an amazing thing. So we wanted to have something big to open and something big to close.
Mm-hmm.
And we also were really conscious of representing our community. I mean, trying to pick films so that every aspect of the community could feel like they were being seen,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is one of the reasons I get sort of ribbed about the title of our presentation, the LGBTQI alphabet soup days of, you know, madness.
Mm-hmm.
But nonetheless, it's about, I feel like we can poke fun at ourselves, you know, we can call it the alphabet mm-hmm. soup days of films, but the reality is we know as well as anyone mm-hmm. that everyone deserves a voice.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we've really tried mm-hmm. to do here. Even in our little tiny, you know, 4 film slots or 5 film slots, we've tried to see as many things as diverse as possible.
Mm-hmm. Well, and on Sunday, you're having a day of short films.
Right.
The second day of the festival. And you talked about, you know, trying to bring something to the festival for everyone. Talk about the process of how you selected the short films and the array of films that you chose to try to draw everybody in to be inclusive, and then some of your favorites.
Well, we have still one slot that we have yet. Mm-hmm. We're still talking about what is going to go in there. So we're still talking that over. But we have 4 of the 5 that we're showing chosen. Let me see here. 1, 2. At the moment, 2 are narrative and 2 are docs. And that's another thing, is that we have really tried to sort of change it up so that we have some narrative, some docs. I think we were heavier into narrative last year and heavier into docs this year, or maybe it's the other way around. I can never remember. But it really comes down to the quality of the film. I mean, if we're calling each other up, and Gary, you looked at some films for us, and we've got people out there, and if the programmers all come in saying, oh, man, this was great, then we know that's an in.
Mm-hmm.
If we took it on ourselves, just Chad and I and one other, to limit the viewing of the short films to us. because we wanted to see a big array of them, and we wanted to get through them quickly so that we could get them on the docket. I have two favorites. Well, do I have two favorites? No, I actually, there's four of them. I can tell you a reason that I would loved every one of them. So there you go, about short films. One of them I love because I actually worked on it. So, and all I will tell you is it's called Never Rob a Bank with Someone You Love. And it's a lesbian film. Okay, so that's all I will tell you about it. But I loved working on it. I thought it was just great when I was on the set. Mm. And in the cut, it got even better.
Wow.
There's another one that's called Change Over Time, which is a short film by a young filmmaker, Ewan Duarte, who is from the Bay Area, or recently lived in the Bay Area, has now gone to Portland, but has a huge following here. And it is about a transition, a transgender youth. And it is very innovative, while being very, very honest and open and real. And I think some of the choices made in how to show this transition are just exceptional. Then we have, we have a film from Australia called Dick, D-I-K. Now, I don't really want to explain much about this film because you can sort of draw your own conclusions. Besides which, I don't want to give away the punchline. It's really well done. And let's see, what's the other one? Oh, Loving the Bony Lady, which is a story of a transgender woman in New York of Puerto Rican descent who has the largest collection of Day of the Dead bony ladies anywhere and has a huge following in New York. So it's this really lovely conversation about religion and spirituality and transgender and love. I mean, it's just mind-blowing.
Great.
Mm-hmm. And then there's The X Factor, and I have no idea what that one's
going to
be.
Right, right,
right. Surprise.
It's a surprise film. Yes, exactly. We do have a couple of surprises throughout the festival this year, and it's not just all about films. We have different package rates that you can get in there. We'll talk about it at the end, I presume, but there will be surprises throughout the weekend, or the Saturday and Sunday. I don't know if that's a weekend, but whatever.
So, Puzzles When Hate Comes to Town explores the aftermath of a brutal hate crime that occurred in a gay bar in New Bedford, Mass. I haven't seen this yet, so I'm really excited about seeing it, and I've heard great things about us. Tell us a bit about the documentary and why you selected it.
We had seen Puzzles. It had been entered to the Sebastopol Documentary Film Festival, and they asked us if we wanted to show it. If we did, they would hold it for us. And we saw it and were blown away.
Oh,
and
nice.
We have a connection to one of the filmmakers. Unfortunately, we thought she was going to come out, but her co-director will come out from D.C. and be there for a Q&A after Puzzles. And all I can say is it really, I think, does an excellent job of showing the aftermath of a hate crime from all sides. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really comes at it with I think, without an axe to grind, really. It sort of looks as objectively as you can at something as horrible as this, but it will engender big talk. So I'm really looking forward to the Q&A afterwards.
Hmm. I think I may have to go through and watch that one myself.
Oh, yeah.
Well, tell us a little bit more about the schedule and some of the documentaries. I guess there's been sort of a shift, and you alluded to that earlier. And you may have hinted around this, but one of them apparently features two real trailblazing lesbians?
Yes. That's the closing film.
Okay.
It's called Reaching for the Moon.
Tell us about that.
It's a Brazilian film. So we have one from Australia, one from Brazil. I think that makes us international. So, you know, Little Sebastopol has gone international one more time here. It is a gorgeous film. If you like beautiful cinematography and really passionate love story, this is the film. It's about the poet Elizabeth Bishop and her time spent in Brazil. And she had I almost said an affair, but I don't think we can categorize it as an affair. She had a relationship with an architect, female architect, whose last name is Suarez, down there at the time. And it's really about the passion and the angst of it all and just their relationship, but it is shot so beautifully. It's just yummy. It's an award-winning film. So we wanted, we've now bookended our fair with a over-the-top gay-themed film to open it and a gorgeous lesbian film to end it, and then everybody else gets to come in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Lesbian love story. It's beautiful.
It's gorgeous,
like you said,
isn't it?
I mean, it's almost epic. I mean, just the cinematography is
amazing. It's sweeping. Those David Lean films when they were sweeping, and that's my feeling from this film.
Which, you know, we don't really see in gay films, especially American gay films lean more towards independent, unfortunately. Which is something I was talking about with someone else. When you go to Frameline, you see these incredible foreign films, and you know, then you see the list of supported by Canada Film or, you know, Switzerland, the Switzerland Film Fund, and you think, well, you know, that's how they do it. And when really talented LGBT filmmakers are struggling, you know,
it's true,
have great careers and have already produced wonderful films, are struggling to have get their films made.
It's true.
Yeah.
And it's difficult. And it's a whole other filmmaking, you know, scenario here.
Mm-hmm.
In America, unfortunately, Hollywood is not the benchmark any longer, I don't believe. Right. But other, you know, if you look at European schools of filmmaking, historically, you're going to see a whole different means. And I think that has held through for LGBT filmmakers.
Mm-hmm.
Much less so here.
Yes. Yes. Mm. And then... another, and again, representing everyone in LGBTQI is often that forgotten I, which many people probably don't even know what that I stands for, and it's intersexed. And this film, I saw at Frameline Intersection, and it is just, it's stunning. The simple fact that, you know, one in
1,500 to 2,000
births. Is technically of an intersex person, which is sort of defined as ambiguous genitalia. But you know, these are people who are in our community, and we may not even realize the struggles that they've gone through. Talk about the film, and talk about the really important sort of North Bay connection is stunning.
Who's, of course, now that you've asked me, I can't tell you exactly the name of this group. Okay.
It's the International...
International...
Intersex Society. It actually no longer exists.
It doesn't exist any longer. But it began here.
Mm-hmm.
And going back to what you said, the fact that one in 1,500 to 2,000 births, that's a huge amount of humanity that have been somehow neglected, pushed under the rug. This film addresses intersex folks now as adults, children... What historically has been done with these children, you know, doctors. I mean, someone actually says in the film, who is an intersex man, look, parents are frightened beyond belief. The doctors are probably frightened at that point. And everybody thought at one point, well, we have to make a choice here. If this child's, you know, genitalia doesn't define who they are, we don't want them to be labeled or shunned or picked on or anything. Mm-hmm. So let's choose. Well, unfortunately, that doesn't work. And that's what we're finding out. The thing that I loved about this film is that it's my first experience in a long time of being riveted by a film that is talking heads, basically. Mm-hmm. It's basically people telling their story. But it is such an interesting set of stories. And the group that you were alluding to began here in Sonoma County. In fact, when I'm looking at some of the shots of that group, it could be the apple orchard next door to me in Sebastopol.
You're looking at it thinking, oh, boy.
Yeah, that looks really familiar.
It's not really identified in the film, but
tell. It certainly does look like Sonoma County and very close to Sonoma County. So I have lots of friends who are non-gay, who are not part of the community, who are coming to this film because they are so interested. Everybody's interested, and thank God, finally.
And directed by a person who's intersex, I think, which is
makes
a huge difference.
Makes a huge difference.
Yeah, the sensitivity sort of around the struggles that these people have.
Some of the folks featured in that film will be there for a Q&A afterwards.
Oh, wow.
So it, again, another powerful, powerful moment.
Screening and event
that
is important for our community.
Amazing. So tell us again when the film festival runs.
It runs on Saturday night, the 19th, and all day Sunday, the 20th. There is a VIP package. There is an all-event package. There is an opening night package, which is just the film and the after party, you can go on to www.sebastopolfilmfestival.org, and the LGBTQI poster will be there, and click on it, and you'll go straight to all the events and all the films, and or you can go to Brown Paper Tickets. There are also tickets available at the Sebastopol Center for the Arts. The phone number there is 829-4797, 829-4797 in the 707.
Great. And give us that website one more time, just in case someone missed it.
It is www.sebastopolfilmfestival.org.
Fantastic. We hope to see all of you there. What a great opportunity to go and check out some films specifically about our community that you're not going to see anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty exciting.
Yes, yes. Thanks for joining us, Cynthia.
Thank you so much.
We didn't get to your career.
That's all right.
Another time.
It's still around.
Another time. We also want to thank Petaluma City Council member Gabe Kearney for joining us tonight. We appreciate you for listening. Please listen to Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m. right here on KRCB Public Radio. You can listen to previous shows and learn all about us at www.outbeatradio.com. Next week, Diana Grayer and Sheridan Gold will be here to host Living Proof.
Fantastic. And we hope you have a great week in the meantime. Here's Bobby Joe Valentine taking us out tonight with Fly. Good night, everyone.
Men meet and that says that I'll never be leaving. I'm 10 years old, but I know how to smoke, and the drinks help to cure the bad feelings. This is my home, and the sticks and the stones are made up of the darkest of things. But in my dreams, I can fly, and I soar, and my feet touch the sky. And it seems I can go anywhere if I try. And the world's not so dark when the clouds make it white. If there's no hope, tell me why. In my dreams, I can fly. Here come the tears, and I cover my ears, and I swear I can hear my own heart beat. When they stop fighting, to turn out the lights, I pretend that I'm already sleeping. After the violence, alone in the silence, just me and the secret I'm keeping. My dad tells me I'm not worth anything, and I've almost admitted defeat.
We are North Bay Public Media, KRCB FM, Windsor, Santa Rosa. News, arts, and ideas where you are. On the air and online at 91.1 and 90.9 FM. Streaming worldwide at krcb.org. It's just before 9 p.m. Stay with us. Moyers and Company's next.
And the world's not so dark when the clouds make it white. If there's no hope, tell me why. In my dreams, I can fly. In my dreams, I can fly. This is my room, and it's robin's egg blue, and it's got a few cracks in the ceiling. This is my home, and the stick.